morning, everybody. This is WTBR's Morning Drive. My name is Bill Sturgeon. I am going to be with you for about 55 minutes. Today, I've got kind of a different interview. Someone I've known for a long time. I have a great deal of respect for him. He was a Pittsfield police officer. He was a lieutenant. He got promoted. I just didn't see any future in it. But anyhow, his name is Jeff Bradford. And he's done something that many of us maybe dream about. Many of us, you know, I'm going to do that. And then it's like on your gravestone, woulda, coulda, shoulda. Jeff did it. So before, Jeff, good morning, and thank you for coming on, sharing your story. And Jeff walked the Appalachian Trail. There you go. If you want to hear about an adventure, and maybe some old cop stories in and out of the day. But Jeff, first and foremost, whatever provoked you to do that?
Well, thanks for having me on, Bill. It's a pleasure to be sharing this time with you. I've known you, like you said, for many years.
Yeah.
Going way back to when I was a student at Southern Vermont College up in Bennington, Vermont.
Yeah.
And you were on the board, I believe, up there.
The board, yeah. And then I was on the faculty too, yeah.
Yes, yeah. And at that time I had been an officer for about 5 years, and I was working in the drug unit, and I was taking classes up there as a non-traditional student, and part-time traveling up there, Pittsfield. And so that was great. That's when we first connected, as I remember. And I've seen you over the years on and off ever since, and always enjoy our conversations. The Appalachian Trail had been on my bucket list for a number of years.
Wow, I never knew.
And my plan had always been for at least, 5 to 8 years, seriously, been to attempt a through hike of the Appalachian Trail when I retired, that year after I retired. And so I retired in September of 2022, and or actually 23, and my wife Sarah and I, in February of this year, along with my sister Michelle, she decided she was going to start the trail with us.
Wow.
As well. And so on Valentine's Day, February 14th, we went down to Amicola Falls, Georgia, and we started the Appalachian Trail northbound.
Wow. And what a trek that is. Excuse me, how many miles?
It's 2,198 miles. It changes a little bit from year to year, a tiny amount, depends. They have, reroutes and things like that. Sections of trail sometimes will have to close. This past year, for example, Hurricane Helene really devastated North Carolina, Tennessee.
Wow.
And so there was a couple of reroutes there. So that'll change the mileage, stuff like that.
Yeah. Plus 2,000, close enough for government work. Is what I said.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and how did you train to do that? I mean, because I don't want people to just think they can fly down and walk back up. I mean, what? And I have to tell people, and I hope you don't mind. So I called Jeff this morning. And for you people that are looking out Jeff's window and seeing my tie, we are recording this on Veterans Day, November 11th. I called Jeff this morning just to check in and set this up. And he was walking in the state forest.
Yeah.
So you're still staying on course. I mean, you're still exercising.
Yes, not quite as much as I was when I was training for this, but I'm trying to maintain some conditioning because I do plan on doing some more hiking in the springtime next year.
Cool.
But the training, when I became serious about it, one of the things I did was I started looking into other trails that I could hike to help me prepare for long distance hike on the Appalachian Trail. And so I learned about the Long Trail in Vermont.
Okay.
Which is a 272-mile trail. It runs from the Massachusetts-Vermont border to Canada.
Wow.
And it takes about 3 weeks, 3.5, 4 weeks, depending on how many miles you do per day. And you know, I couldn't. It generally takes about 6 months to thru-hike the Appalachian Trail, and I knew I couldn't take 6 months off of work.
Yeah.
But I said, you know what, I could take a month, and so I did. In August of 2021, I took a month off of work, and I went up and I hiked the Vermont Long Trail, and
Wow.
that gave me a lot of confidence because that trail is a very difficult trail. It's a beautiful trail.
Oh, wow.
And I had interacted with Appalachian Trail thru hikers
Oh.
before I did that. And they had said to me, you know, Jeff, if you can do the Vermont Long Trail, you can do the Appalachian Trail. It's just a lot longer. But
Right.
you'll be
Oh.
challenged and you'll meet the mountains and you'll meet all the different things, the obstacles that you'll have to deal with on the Appalachian Trail, you'll deal with on the Long Trail. So I did that and I learned a lot, and it convinced me, you know, gave me the confidence
Yeah.
to attempt an Appalachian Trail thru hike.
And you did it with your wife and your sister. And that had to be an exciting piece, just doing it as a team like that.
Yes, like during COVID, my wife and I became very much interested in YouTube videos regarding Appalachian Trail thru hikers.
Oh,
And
wow.
what we discovered was that a lot of people that were hiking the trail were actually vlogging their journey. And so I would say for 5 years, that's what we did, is every spring we would look at see, you know, and see who was hiking the trail, and we would follow their videos, and we learned a lot from
Oh,
just
I'll bet.
watching people's videos. And so that kind of really, you know, sparked our
Yeah.
interest even more. And so my wife also became committed to hiking the Appalachian Trail. And so in February, she and my sister Michelle, who is about a couple years older than me, and she lives down in North Carolina,
Wow.
kind of jumped on it as well because she had started getting into backpacking, and she said, "Do you mind if I join you?" And so the three of us started, and Michelle did really well. She wasn't as experienced as Sarah and I, so she made it to Hot Springs, North Carolina, and then made the decision to get off trail because it was just, you know, wasn't for her in terms
Right.
of a through hike attempt.
Right.
Since then, her plan is to section hike the trail
Of
in
course.
hopes of finishing it over years instead of over months, which is fine. And so Sarah and I pushed on, and Sarah, my wife and I, we got to Damascus, Virginia. And Sarah had been struggling. She had lost a good amount of weight,
Wow.
struggling with her energy levels. And she made the decision in Damascus that she was finished and she was going to get off trail. And so I was alone from then on.
Wow.
And I made the decision. I was committed to doing this hike. You know, I
Yeah.
wasn't going to give up. So I continued pushing north.
Wow. And what other than loneliness or whatever, what were some of the other big challenges you had to face?
Well, every day there was always a challenge. It's not just the terrain, but it's the more you progress up the trail, in my case, headed north, the more fatigued you get. You start losing weight.
Yeah.
You know, it starts becoming a little bit more of a struggle every day to keep up with the daily intake of your nutrition, and depending on the weather conditions
Can't imagine.
and the trail conditions. And so almost every day you're kind of you're trying to survive the day, you know.
Yeah.
And certainly there were many times when it was relaxing and it was fun, but it's a very difficult task to do, to through hike the Appalachian Trail. And there's varying levels of ability. You know, you have some people that seem to make it look easy.
Yeah.
And then there's other people who are on the average hiker level, which I think I'm at. I would just consider myself an average hiker. So I would do about 15 to 18 miles a day is what I built up to.
Wow.
And my routine was to do 3.5 days on trail. So I would hike for 3.5 days. And then on that fourth day, I would get off trail and go into a town, and I would resupply my food,
Yeah.
do my laundry, take a shower, and resupply all my food for another 3.5 days on trail. And then I would just basically wake up and repeat, every 3.5 days, just kind of repeat that cycle. And then every now and again, I would try to take a 0 day, which is a day that you don't do any hiking. So maybe on that fourth day, when you go into town, on that fifth day, you would take a break and not hike at all and just rest. But I didn't do enough of that. It's funny how when you get on trail, you reach a certain point and you just find yourself kind of being caught up in the momentum of, I need to keep moving forward. I need to keep putting miles on. And then again, you're losing weight, your energy levels, and but the community is just unbelievable out there on the trail.
Oh, that's nice.
And, even though I know I said I was alone after Damascus, well, I wasn't alone per se because there was other hikers around, and you make these connections, and you hike up with other hikers, and it's just a great community.
And you know what I see, even here, they'll come off the trail like you did, and get a motel room and do what you did, take a hot shower or whatever, and then they get back on the trail. So I really liked what you said about 3.5 days, you got a break, because I can't see people. I really can't see people just going. It to me, you'd lose too much weight, and two, you start talking to the squirrels. You know, I mean, I talk to them now, but I don't mind it as much because they talk back.
I did a lot. I did a good amount of just talking to the woods, as I was
Oh, I'll
walking.
bet.
And you're absolutely right. When you're through hiking the Appalachian Trail or any long distance trail, it's the weight that you carry. So you try to keep your pack weight as light as you can. And so that 3.5 days of food allow me to keep my pack weight with my gear and a liter of water. During the winter months when we started, I was at 27, 28 pounds in my backpack. And then as the summer months came, I was able to get my pack weight down to 24, 25 pounds, pretty good. So the more days you spend on trail, the more food you have to carry. And so there were people out there that I did hike around that, we're spending 5, 6 days. Even one woman was carrying 7 days of food. She was a machine. She was in great shape. Her pack, when she would start her 7 days on trail, weighed 45 pounds. And she was just unbelievable. And the only reason I stayed hiking with her for, I actually hiked with her for a few weeks. And the only reason I was able to stay with her is because she was being slowed down by carrying all that weight. And, I would say to her on and off, I would say to her, God, if you carried a 20, 22, 23 pound pack, you'd be done in 4 months.
Well, I will tell you, from my experience of hiking in the army, when you made me think of this, is we always had to carry extra ammo for the machine gun, and that always added more weight than you ever wanted to carry. But that in itself is, for people who may be thinking this about this, listen to what Jeff just said, because I think it's crucially important. Because I never hiked any. When I came back from Vietnam, everybody was camping and hiking, and I thought, I just did that for a year. I consider camping now staying at a Holiday Inn Express. So, but think about what you have to do. And I'll repeat this through the show, because some people hear something like this and they're going to go, first of all, start walking, not hiking, just walking. Because my wife and I went on a tour of Italy, and one of the things that recommended was start walking and build up to a minimum of 5 miles a day. Well, we did, but the couple we went with didn't. And so they finally were ending up taking cabs, as we would go, like in Florence, we would walk from place to place. They would take a cab.
Right.
So if you're even contemplating this, we're going to have Jeff. What he's doing, I think, is a tutorial. And even if you want to hike in the Pittsfield State Forest, really and truly.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, today is the great thing about today with the internet and YouTube, and is you can learn
Oh,
just
yeah.
about anything. But if you're just focused on learning how to safely hike, even if it's a day hike, like you were saying,
Yeah.
a lot of information out there in terms of what essential gear we should all be carrying, even on a day hike up the state forest,
Yeah.
being prepared. And the longer hikes on the trail require more experience, more training, and more equipment. And it can get expensive to buy the equipment that you
Right.
really need for a hike like that. But unfortunately, I did see people, particularly in the beginning, who were not prepared.
Yeah.
I remember we were, I think it was our second day on the trail. We were in Georgia, and it was in the 40s. It was raining, pouring all day. It's still, for me, I mean, being from the Northeast in New England, I'm used to the
Right.
cold weather. But the worst weather for me is when it's in the 40s or low 50s. That time of year in February down in Georgia, and it's
Yeah.
raining because you get wet and cold, and then you just can't get warm again.
Yeah.
And so we were at a shelter. They have shelters all along the trail, which are usually three-sided with a roof. It's open in the front.
Wow.
We got in there in the late afternoon, early evening, and we saw hikers. These two younger hikers came in. One was wearing a trash bag for a raincoat because he didn't have a raincoat. Another person was carrying, they couldn't fit their food bag into their backpack, so they were actually physically carrying their food bag, and they were so cold when they got to the shelter. I remember they were doing push-ups and jumping jacks,
Wow.
trying to get their
Warm
body
up.
temperature up to
Yeah.
stay warm. And hypothermia can happen really quick, particularly in those conditions. Again, even up at the State Forest today, when I was up there, I think it was in the 20s with the it feels like 11 degrees. And I only saw a couple other people up there, but you got to be dressed and you have to be prepared.
Yeah. And I think for people that are listening and would want to try this, as Jeff has said, there's a lot of great YouTube stuff. There's a lot of ways you can do it. But also, try to associate yourself with a group.
Yes.
A group that goes out, and there's plenty of them in Berkshire County. And just start, don't try Greylock on your first hike,
Right.
unless you want to be air evac, because when I was a cop in Lanesboro, I remember two distinctly, two times that were like more rescue attempts than the person just pooped out. That Greylock doesn't seem like much until you try to walk up it.
Yeah, and most of my the training that I did prior to the Appalachian Trail, for that year beforehand, I would walk the road at the State Forest, which I
Yeah.
still do, with my backpack fully loaded with 25 plus pounds, and then I would also walk the rail trail because there is a lot of road walking on the Appalachian Trail as well.
Okay.
I mean, not I wouldn't I don't know what percentage of it is
Right.
road walking, but there are sections where you're road walking. So just going out and doing those things and trying to do them in the conditions that you're going to be in on trail.
Yeah.
So a day like today, I wouldn't not hike for my training, obviously.
Right.
If it was pouring rain out, I would still force myself to go out wearing the gear that I had to train in those conditions to see how it was and to
Yeah,
see
yeah.
how things held up.
Yeah. Yeah, and I have to say this about the military. While no one I don't think enjoyed these long interesting hikes and but we had the equipment, and it was well thought out equipment. I mean, through trial and error. And I was just watching something on on YouTube about some guys in World War One who they had leather soles on their boots, and they wore out like in 2 weeks with the training. And so a lot of the military, and I'm sure a lot of the design stuff now is developed from the military. But it doesn't help, and I can tell you, I won't get into specifics, but I can tell you, we had a walkout one time of a place in Vietnam when the monsoon started abruptly, and I never want to be wet like that again. I was wet for days, and even though we had good stuff, there's some you just can't help it.
Yeah, for
Wet and
sure.
it, yeah.
And starting in February that's generally, it's a little early to start the Appalachian Trail down south. We weren't
Yeah.
alone.
Oh.
There were many people that started around that time frame. Most people start in March. But when we went through the Smoky Mountains, it was like a day like today. I
Yeah.
mean, it takes about 5 days to go through the Smoky Mountains.
Oh, wow.
We had snow and wind and ice and rain and then we had sunshine. It was a mixture of weather over that 5 days or so that we hiked through the Smoky Mountains, and it was absolutely beautiful. For me, when I went through there, when I went through the Grayson Highlands, I also had similar conditions. Unfortunately, it was very cold. It snowed the night before. I had gotten into the Grayson Highlands.
Oh.
And but what I'm getting at is I actually loved the views with that low-hanging clouds and the snow and the snow on the trees. It made for some beautiful views. And I took a lot of video,
Oh, cool.
and actually and I similar to the people that I watched, I have a YouTube channel, and I vlogged my entire hike. I did a video every day.
Oh, wow.
Total of 187 videos I have up on my YouTube channel. And so I was able to capture a lot of that beautiful scenery with the winter elements, mixed in
Yeah.
down in Tennessee. And for me, having the videos are awesome because someday I'm going to be, much older than I am now.
Like me. I consider hiking walking up the stairs from my office.
Yeah, and I want to be able to look back and reflect
Yeah.
and share those memories with with family and relive some of the experiences. But the other thing I wanted to do was kind of give back to the YouTube hiking community, because I learned so much about how to thru hike the trail by watching other people's videos, that I wanted to do that for other people that were interested as well.
And that's nice of you to do that. Would you mind giving your YouTube address so if people watching can go on and check it out?
Yeah, sure. It's real easy. It's LT Hikes. LT is short for Lieutenant, which is where that's the position I retired from in the department. So simply, if you go to YouTube and just put in LT Hikes, you'll see my picture of myself pop up. And
I got to mark that down because I'm of the age you want to be to
yeah.
get here.
And I
LT.
can tell you too, like the community, the YouTube, the viewers, the comments that they left on a daily basis on my videos,
Oh, cool.
they were so supportive and encouraging. And particularly when things got more difficult, and when Sarah left in Damascus and I was on my own, it got emotionally
Yeah.
tough, because I went from having the support of my sister and Sarah, and Sarah's her she's really good at navigating. She was doing the majority, if not all, of our navigating.
Okay.
And to wake up and have her not be there, and I've got to do it all myself. And just like I said, Virginia, particularly, Virginia has about 500, and I think it's 80 miles of the trail is in Virginia.
Wow.
It's
Wow.
the state with the longest trail miles in it. And so you're in Virginia for 4 or 5 weeks, and it's just long, and it's a beautiful state. And I entered Virginia in the springtime, and it was so cool watching all the spring flowers coming out and the trees starting to bud. It was an immersive experience just being on trail, starting in February and then going all the way up to Maine and finishing on August 19th, seeing the change in the seasons. And you know, and actually being out in it, physically out in it, not just watching it like you would from, you know, when you're working and you're living in in Pittsfield, you kind of, but actually living out in it was a good experience.
Now, when you did you were the shelters that you slept in, or did you have your own sleep? Well, you obviously had your own sleeping bag and stuff, but did or were they mostly outside sleeping arrangements?
Yeah, the trail's set up where they have shelters every so many miles.
Oh,
it's
cool.
not exactly so many miles, but they try to make a shelter available for hikers,
oh, cool.
you know, so that at least once or twice during your hiking day, you have that opportunity. But it doesn't always line up with the miles you're hiking that day. So all of us carry tents, or some people carry hammock systems.
Okay.
Some people simply carry a tarp and sleep underneath the tarp.
Yeah.
That goes back to weight savings, because, you know, tents weigh more than a tarp.
Yeah.
And the technology today with between hammocks and tenting is pretty close, the weight. But generally the more expensive the equipment, the lighter it can get. So it becomes, you know, very expensive to try and get the best, lightest gear. So I would carry a tent. I carried a Z-Pax tent, which is a nice top of the line two-person tent.
Okay.
And in the hiking world, two-person tents are really for one person, because you try to put two people in a two-person tent with their sleeping pads, and it's very cramped. So sometimes it would line up where I would stay in the shelters, and then I would just use my sleeping pad and my sleeping quilt or my sleeping bag. And then other times I would just find like a dispersed campsite, and I would just put my tent up and, you know, tent for the night.
Yeah, and I have to ask this because I can see people now. What? Tell us about critters. Did you run into any critters while you were hiking the trail?
Yeah, I did. You know, interestingly, I did not see very many bears.
Wow.
Because they're the
that
Smoky
could be a
Mountains.
blessing.
Yeah, the Smoky Mountains, for example, there's a lot of bears in the Smoky Mountains. And then that is in large part due to the fact they don't allow any hunting in the Smoky Mountains. They don't allow dogs on trail in the Smoky Mountains. So it's basically becomes overpopulated, in my opinion, with bears. The bears become habituated to having hikers present, and then all it takes is one time getting lucky with a hiker's food bag that they didn't properly hang, or even if they properly hung it, some of those bears become adept at climbing up and getting your food bag, and then that just reinforces the behavior, and then they just go looking, you know, particularly around the shelters or the campsites. You know, the bears will come in, and they're not afraid of anybody. So they'll come in. But I saw two bear cubs in Virginia. I was walking down a trail, and they were like maybe 30 yards in front of me, and they ran across the trail off to my right. And I, you know, I'm from New England. I'm used to seeing bears. And I said, wow, that's really cool. And then I said, oh my God, where's the mother?
Yeah.
And I'm looking to the left of the trail where she was, and I didn't see her. So I just, you know, started talking loudly, and just backed up and talked loudly, and, you know, where's your mom? We're to the cubs, you know, where's your mom? Where's your mama? And then after maybe 10 minutes or less, I just walked beyond that area, and I never saw her.
Wow. That's
snakes,
very unusual too.
Snakes were the one thing that I was concerned about, being from, you know, Pittsfield, Berkshire County. We don't really have a lot of rattlesnakes up here. I know down in South County that there's some rattlesnakes have been seen, but it's not something you would see on trail here. However, in Virginia, Pennsylvania, these rocky areas I walked through in Pennsylvania, you know, I mean, they're just a lot of these areas I went through, I learned, were like nesting sites for rattlesnakes. And, you know, there'd be hundreds of rattlesnakes. People would tell you, oh, there's hundreds of rattlesnakes up there. And so I did see a couple, And again, that made me a little uneasy just because I wasn't used to
Right.
hiking on a trail with venomous snakes. I saw another venomous snake in Virginia. But yeah, like that was the one thing that would keep me alert is as I was
Oh, no.
walking, particularly alone, I'd be like on these rocks certain times of day when the sun was high.
Yeah.
You didn't have to worry about it in the mornings when it was cooler. But and just deer. I did see a moose up in Maine on trail, which was nice.
Now, let me ask you too, you had a cell phone?
Yes. Yeah.
And
I use
how
my
did you?
cell phone. Yeah, most of the hikers on the Appalachian Trail use Far Out, which is an app.
Oh.
You have to pay for it, but you buy the Appalachian Trail
Oh.
that's within the app. And once you set that up on your phone, you can use that even if you don't have cell service.
Oh, wow.
So it'll guide you along the route. It'll help you with, figuring out your mileage. You can look to see whether you're off trail or if you're still on trail. There's a red line that you can follow as you're walking.
Oh, wow.
I
That's
mean,
pretty.
the trail is marked fairly well, depending on the section in the different states that you're going through. It's marked with white blazes.
Okay.
It's not marked as frequently as I'd like to see it marked. There was
Yeah.
times where you'd go a mile or more and you wouldn't see a white blaze. But if you became concerned about, geez, did I get off trail? You could just take your Far Out app out and you could verify that.
Wow.
The other huge advantage to Far Out is that it has a social media content so that hikers can communicate with one another. For example, the water sources will be listed on there, and you can see that there's a water source coming up in 5 miles.
Yeah.
You can expand that, and people can leave comments. The water source is really good here. It's flowing, or it's not good, or it's dried up. So you can get a lot of information. People will put information there about snakes or bears or the conditions of shelters that they've gone to. For example, mice.
It's your
Mice
own
in
little
shelters.
community, though. It's like a community of people who are hiking or have hiked the Appalachian Trail.
Yes, yeah. And again, that was my favorite part of the hike was the community, meeting all the different
Yeah.
people. I mean, there's people on trail that are attempting through hikes of the trail. There are people that are day hiking. There are people that are just out for a night or two. There's people that have already through hiked the trail before.
Wow. Wow.
And like myself, like next year, I plan on going back on trail for at least a couple weeks just to get that experience of being back on trail, spending a couple weeks, hiking a section. I think I'm going to head back down to Virginia and hike for 2 weeks. So there's all these different people that are out there on trail that you're interacting with, and they're so supportive.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I mean, I had complete strangers give me their phone numbers
Wow.
on trail because they lived in the area and they knew I was a thru hiker, and we had a good conversation, and they would just give me their phone numbers and say, "Listen, if you run into any problems when you get into the next town, I live close by. Please don't hesitate to reach out so I can help you out, give you a ride." Or, sometimes the trail, usually the trail, it doesn't go through the town. Sometimes it does, like through Dalton, it goes right through
Right.
the town of Dalton. But many times the trail is outside of communities by, 4 or 5 miles. And so you either have to hitchhike into the towns, get a shuttle to pick you up and bring you into the town. Or again, like those people that I would meet, they would offer to pick me up maybe and give me a ride into town.
All right. Well, I'm here with Jeff Bradford. We are talking initially, but we're going to talk more about our careers. But he walked the Appalachian Trail from the beginning to the end. And I, when we got chatting the other day, I thought, what a fascinating, fascinating show. Because, as I said, my only hiking experience, other than, little stuff around here along the Apple, Ashuwatogak or whatever, was in the service. And I just thought, for people, there's so many people who watch this program that they astonish me. So, like, I interviewed the people from the rowing club up there at Anoter Lake.
Sure.
Yeah, and they wanted me to, yeah, I said, No, I'll watch. We'll be right back. This is WTBR 89.7 FM. We are simulcasting on PCTV channel 1301, and we are also broadcasting in the Southern Berkshire. We've expanded our range. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more and exciting stuff to talk about.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM.
Hey, it's Sean from WTBR FM. Whether you just found this station for the first time or you've been listening for years, you might not know everything about WTBR FM. Want to find out more? It's easy. Just go to WTBRFM.com. You can find full programming schedules, listen to the station anywhere in the world, subscribe to our podcasts, and even learn to create a program of your own. And of course, donate to the station. That's WTBRFM.com. Check it out today.
Greetings, this is John Pollock, host of The Jazz Train, which comes your way every Saturday night from 10 to 11:30. The Jazz Train generally features music recorded on a particular calendar date in years past and provides relevant commentary and discographical details. So why not join me for a ride on The Jazz Train for a weekly musical adventure, coming to you on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
You have chosen wisely.
WTBR. And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, we are back. That good-looking guy, his name is Jeff Bradford. We've known each other for several years. He and I served on the Pittsfield Police Department. He got a lot higher than I did. And that's good because I was going to tell where I was. But the thing that I bumped into him when we started chatting, he walked the entire Appalachian Trail. That not like me across the street and then I'm winded. He walked the whole trail. And how many months did it take you, Jeff?
It took me 6 months and 1 week.
There you go.
Yeah. And, you know, New Hampshire and Maine were two of the most beautiful states to hike the Appalachian Trail through. The toughest, too. The whites in New Hampshire.
Oh, I can't even imagine it.
Yeah. Absolutely beautiful, but intimidating because it can be dangerous, you know, going up over Mount Washington.
Yeah.
You know, the weather, even in the summer months, the weather can quickly change up there. But I was very fortunate. It was pretty much drought conditions in New Hampshire and Maine, so we hadn't gotten much rain. So when I went through the whites, it was very little rain. We had very good weather.
Wow.
And then what I didn't realize, because nobody really talks about it too much, is how difficult Maine was, too. You know, when you get through the White Mountains, you think, oh, you know, the hardest climbs are behind me. And then you get into Maine, and it's very difficult, you know, not quite as difficult as New Hampshire, but right up there. So that experience was great. And, you know, again, the drought conditions definitely impacted us. We had to carry a lot of water because the water sources were dried up. The
water is heavy, isn't it? People don't.
Yes, it's two pounds a liter.
Yeah.
So if I carry
we had the 5 liter canteens.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, you're carrying that in your food. You know, when conditions are right, you try to just carry 1 liter of water at a time.
Right.
And then you just simply, you know, get to the next water source and you fill up. But when the water's scarce, you know, sometimes I had to carry 3 liters of water.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, 6 pounds of water. The only positive thing about that was the rivers up in Maine were very low because traditionally those rivers can be very difficult to cross for AT through hikers. You know, you have to be very careful crossing some of those rivers in Maine. But they weren't even up to my knees, even the bigger ones when we went through them. So that wasn't an issue.
Wow. And you know, for the audience, the people that are listening, did say, well, I'd like to do that. It's a process. You just don't run out and buy everything. And as I mentioned earlier in the show, the first half, start with a walk. Start with a walk. Walk around the neighborhood. Walk, you know, go down on North Street. Do something. But and build up, because this is this is really, Jeff, an endurance.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one of the things I actually commented about afterwards. I've been doing some YouTube videos about my experience hiking the trail, and since I've been home, just to kind of educate some of the people who are interested in learning more about how to attempt a thru hike. And it's an endurance sport, is what it is. It really is. But you do not have to be an athlete, you know, top physical condition.
No.
To attempt the trail. Like there are different people on trail from all different walks of life. I met people in their 70s. I met an 80-year-old woman up in Maine. I think I didn't interact with her too much. I just happened to pass by her. We exchanged a couple words, but I'm pretty certain it was the woman who was in the national news recently as the oldest woman to through hike the Appalachian Trail.
Oh, wow.
But I ran into people from all different walks of life and all different physical abilities. And there's a lot of people on trail who will do sections of the trail over a decade or over 30 or 20 years. I ran into these three gentlemen, and I think they have been working on it for 20 years. Wow. They go out and do 2 weeks or so at a time, and they just pick away at accomplishing the whole trail over the course of that time. So again, if you're interested in doing it within 12 months, you can do it. You can do it, but you have to be, you know, you have to have a basic physical ability to do it, and you have to have the right mental attitude to do it, but you don't have to do it fast. You know, like you see some people on trail, particularly these younger fit people, and, you know, they're doing 25 mile days. You know, you don't need to do 25 mile days in order to successfully through hike the Appalachian Trail. On average, you know, my wife did the math, because I'm not very good at doing the math, and she is. I averaged 15 miles a day over that 6 months.
Wow, that's good.
Yeah, so if you went out and did 15 miles averaged, you can do it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think you're making a good point, too. And that is, if you decide, and I don't care if it's the Appalachian Trail or Ashuwiltokuk Trail, mm-hmm. you know, pace yourself. Don't exhaust it. One of the things that I actually learned this in the military, and if you think about the military, everything was cadence. Well, there's a reason for cadence, so that you test yourself. And you pace yourself, I guess is a better, not test, but pace. Because you can burn out, you know, you start off like a house of fire and you turn out to a kindling stick.
Yeah, and I really burnt myself out over time. By the time I got to Massachusetts, I was physically exhausted. I had lost 27 pounds, and I'm not a big man. So
you never were.
167 when I started.
Wow.
So it was down to just 140. And, you know, I had to really kind of adjust my pace. And I just wasn't eating enough. I didn't get that hiker hunger that people talk about. Most people, when they do a long distance hike like this, they kind of get this insatiable appetite where they just want to eat. I never really got that. So when I got to Massachusetts, I adjusted my diet somewhat and started carrying a little bit more food and started making myself eat a little bit more consistently. And I also took more rest days rather than just pushing out that fourth day going back on trail. And I feel like it helped me a lot. And if I, you know, in hindsight, I learned if I went back and did the trail again, there's things I would do differently.
Yeah.
And that would be one of the pieces of advice I would give people is to take a rest day at least every 10 days. Just take a day where you don't hike and do anything. Eat all day and rest and recover. because it is an endurance sport. And, you know, I don't know too many people that go to the gym every day and do legs, you know, for example. You just don't go to a gym and do legs every day. But yet we, as we go out, we hike every day on the Appalachian Trail doing 15 plus miles. And so your body needs that rest.
I sit here in amazement of you. I really do. Hey, before we run out of time, Jeff retired as a lieutenant from the Pittsfield Police. I knew Jeff in a variety of positions that he held. What was your favorite position is when you were a police officer?
Without a doubt, being a shift commander, a lieutenant running a patrol shift. That was what I was most proud of. And I did a lot over the course of my 30-year career there.
Yeah.
I did the regional SWAT team for 15 years, so I was involved with that. I was a narcotics investigator, community policing, bike patrol, sergeant, and then, but being a patrol lieutenant and having the privilege of working with a shift of 15 patrolmen and three sergeants, that was my most enjoyable time. I did take a temporary captain's position for about a year and a half. I was the administrative captain, because a captain had retired and nobody wanted the job. And Chief Wynn posted it, and I looked at it as an opportunity to learn about the
Sure.
administrative side of running an agency. And I enjoyed that year and a half, and I did learn a tremendous amount. But I remember Chief Wynn came to me and said, "Are you interested in the position permanently? Take the civil service test." And I said, "I'm going back to being a lieutenant."
Yeah.
I missed being in the community as well, being in uniform and
Yeah.
working in the community.
What did you find? And I th to dovetail a little bit on what you just said. I never had as my career progressed, I progressed, but the further I got up the ladder, I don't know why they call it a ladder, it should call it a shooty shoot. But the further I got up the ladder, the further I actually got away from what I thought my job was.
Yes.
You know, like you had an experience, you're a shift commander, then you went to an administrative captain. And all of a sudden, it's not what you, well, what the job was, what you thought it was.
No, it's not. It's the important stuff that needs to be done, like who chains organize,
Oh,
the state
yeah.
comes in and inspects the cell. It's like it's business oriented things that are important, but reviewing payroll and overtime slips and internal affairs investigations, which I was involved with as a lieutenant as well, but
Right.
you're involved at a different level as a captain. So for me, being in uniform, getting out in that community, I was not a type of lieutenant that stayed in my office. I would generally be in there for an hour or two in the beginning of my shift, and then I was out on the street. And what's interesting, since I've retired too, you reflect back on the job and
Yeah.
think, I wish I had done differently. And I think, people may disagree with this that worked with me, but I feel like my last year there, I was just really burnt out from the job. And was really, really ready to retire. But my experience, my last 3, 4, 5 years, the relationships that I was able to start building with officers, I wish I had done more of that in the beginning.
Yeah.
I got on the job in 1993. Some of the people that you worked with were still there,
Yeah.
but it was an old school mentality. And the supervisors, they weren't very nice. They weren't very nice to you as a patrolman.
Wait,
You
here's
didn't
my
expect them to
surprise
be
face.
nice.
Here's
Yeah,
my surprise face.
you didn't expect them to be nice.
Oh, no.
Fast forward to, today, nobody would last a week there with the attitude of those supervisors that were there in the 90s, early 90s. But we're a victim of growing up in that and learning from that. So,
Yeah.
I think the department became much more personal,
And professional.
and professional as I stayed there throughout
Yeah.
the years. And no fault to those old time officers. and supervisors that were there, they were a product of the generation before them as well.
They never went to an academy.
And some of them never went to an academy.
Yeah, they were taught by the World War II guys. They were taught by the guy who was told to train them.
Yeah, so, and a good friend of mine is—he's now retired, Mike Maddalena. He retired as a lieutenant.
Oh, great guy! Yep.
And at his retirement party, I never forget what he said. That and the job is all about building relationships and maintaining those relationships.
That's exactly right.
I learned that too late in my career to actually have benefited from that more.
Yeah.
But I think that's what the department has going for it today is it's a younger department.
Yes. I don't
the
know.
Officers that are there, the men and women that are there, they really want to do a great job.
Yeah.
And the leadership that's there is more focused on building relationships with the officers and making their job satisfaction higher.
Yeah.
Because today, if an officer, you know, when you and I got hired, you never left that job unless you retired. I mean, people would stay there or you died.
Yeah.
Today, younger people, they're looking for career satisfaction. And within a few years, if they don't see opportunities, they're going to go work for another agency or
That's
go
right.
into a different line of work. So it's much different. And, you know, it's got a lot of potential. And Chief Dolly is a good friend of mine. You know, God bless him for taking that job.
I can't say enough good about Chief Dolly.
Yeah, it's a hard job.
Cop.
Yes. And you make decisions that, you know, aren't popular. But his heart has always been, he's a patrolman's chief. He cares about people and he has always built those relationships that I talked about.
And you know, what you're saying is correct because back when I first went on, we had all the World War II guys. I mean, they were accustomed to doing something one way. And I won't get into who, but one I had got a call from I was in Lanesboro to back up a Pittsfield police officer on the causeway, a person exposing themselves. So I go down and off air, and so I said, "Well, what are you going to do?" A guy standing there with his pants down to his, I said, "Well, first of all, why don't you have him pull his pants up?"
Yeah.
Then I said, "You're going to lock him up, right?" And they said, "For what?" He said, "He's just exposing himself." I said, "Well, you can lock him up for lewd and lascivious in speech and behavior." He looked at me like I had 17 heads.
Mm.
Yeah, right. What's that?
Yeah.
And then he said to me, "I'm going to do this. I'm locking him up. You're under arrest for what'd you say it was?" And I told
him. Yeah.
He said, "If I get in trouble, I'm coming after you." But I can't fault them because they didn't have the training. First of all, they were in the war. They came back with a whole bag, a different bag than I had from the war. But I went to the academy, and it is a fundamental thing that all cops need to go through and have to go through today. But I learned so much in the academy. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, absolutely. The other biggest satisfaction I had was I was involved with our field training program for many years.
Yeah, I remember that when you were.
As a trainer, as a sergeant, as a lieutenant. And that kind of kept you excited about the job because you'd see the new officers coming in out of the academy. And then, you know, we put them with a training officer for 21 weeks and to see them progress and develop into a self-sufficient, you know, officer who can go on what we call solo patrol because we don't ride two-person cruisers in Pittsfield.
Right.
Although I would love to see us get to a staffing level someday where we could do that because we're a busy enough community.
Oh.
Having two officers in a cruiser, I think is important for officer safety and to share the workload with someone as well. But in any event, to see those officers get to the point where they can be on patrol by themselves and then to watch them as they go on through their, you know, their first year of working and teaching them and learning that's
grow.
Satisfaction.
Yeah. And they grow and you feel so proud because you know, in my other, when I left the department and went other way, grooming people and watching them become successful, that always made me happy. You know, I just saw a guy retired that I had worked with, and he retired as deputy commissioner. And I can remember when he came out of the academy, and just to watch his career, almost like yours. So when I met you, you were a patrol officer.
Yes. Yeah.
And you retired a lieutenant. I mean, to me, it is a career. It's not an easy career. I mean, before we go, what was your most traumatic thing? What still bothers you? Say, I have a few things that I won't share, but if you want to.
Yeah, no, and definitely one of the reasons I wanted to hike the Appalachian Trail was to try and help me maybe process some of the traumas that I experienced on the job.
Yeah.
And there were many. You know, I was involved in a police shooting on Wakona Street in August of 2001.
Yeah.
I believe that was the first shooting that the police department had been involved in that ended up in a fatality.
Right. You know?
And it was very difficult for many different reasons, but the police department had never been through anything like that before. In the district attorney's office at the time, you know, there weren't really policies in place at the police department on how to care for the officers.
Right.
Fast forward to today, now we have very good policies, which Chief Wynn, to his credit, you know, one of the first things he did when he became chief, because he was a sergeant when I was involved in that shooting, and he saw firsthand the lack of care that went into the officers, because the victims in an officer involved shooting are everybody. You know,
that's exactly
my particular shooting involved a suicide by cop, and so that individual's family, friends, the officers directly involved, our family, my wife. You know, the wife and the family of the other officer that was involved in that.
Exactly.
The officers that were on the stairwell with me that day. You know, everybody is impacted by that. And then since then, I think we've had probably 7 officer-involved shootings in the last 2 decades.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, with Chief Wynn, when he became chief, he put policies into place. So internally, there's a process there for the officers and their families to be cared for. And you know, that's important, but there's still not enough education to the community in general about the impact that these shootings are having on the individual officers. And I was passionate about that because I was there for those other 6 shootings, and I think I always would try to advocate for those situations and for those officers and their families, because our people are trained very well and they do the job that we ask them to do.
Today, they don't get the credit they should. It's a tough job. All I can say is this is to the civilians out there. Before you criticize a police officer, understand that trauma comes with the job. I covered a triple fatal, and I'll tell you, I can bring it back in a moment. So, because there was a couple of kiddos involved. Jeff Bradford, thank you for coming on the show. Thank you for your service to the Pittsfield Police Department and the city of Pittsfield, the citizens. One of me. I'm a citizen. I still pay taxes. And thank you for your friendship over the years. It really does mean a lot to an old soldier like me. So the best to you. Let's stay in touch, though.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
And thank you so much for having me and letting me talk to you about this. And I could talk.
Fascinating.
There's just so much the positive stuff to talk about, like after retirement too. I mean, that's the other big thing is, you know, many of us, our brother and sister officers retire, and then it's like, all right, what do I do from here?
Yeah.
There's a whole other life out here after you retire. And it's important to know that.
Exactly. You could go on a radio.
Like, yeah.
Jeff, say hi to your beautiful wife and thank you so much. And stay, please stay in touch.
I will, Bill. Thank you. Thank you again.
All right. Thank you, everybody. And as I always say, and I mean it from my heart, God bless. And today, lift somebody up. Don't put somebody down. We're all in this together. We need to help each other. And I mean that. Be well, my good friend. And thank you for coming on. Bye, everybody. Talk to you soon.